Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Maze Pants. I am Dave Nightingale. He is Patrick Vent. We are together, Maze Pantalones. This is our fifth time together, and, God, we got a pretty damn good show lined up. Joining us in a little bit will be Michael Felder from the always outstanding InTheBleachers.net. Their outstanding podcast can be heard every week, as can ours. So you got time, you got an iPod. Need to make sure we're kind of both on there. Pat, what's going on, my brother?
Not a whole lot. Just, you know, living the dream. Beating up on Cyclones.
Well, actually, I wanted to hit on that immediately because what was the final score again?
That'd be 35-7.
So 35-7, and how much money was raised for children's charity as a result of the absolute ass-whooping that was delivered upon Iowa State?
Well, we're getting about $412 per touchdown. So with five touchdowns, that's just over $2,000.
That is, I'm going to keep coming back to that. That's the only time I'm not going to say anything about it is when you play Michigan. But I still think to this day that is one of the coolest damn things that any site has ever gotten on. So I'm going to just keep harping on
this. It's been a great experience for us and for our community. And we didn't think we'd have anything near that kind of, support. So we're very happy with
So this is just further proof that, all that time, folks, that you waste listening to us and reading our sites and pretending that you're doing work actually goes to a good cause until you get fired for reading us. And then that's a whole other story.
Right.
But we'll move on from that. Now let's also go into one other favorite little thing of yours, which is, of course, Minnesota losing to a 1-8 school.
It must be a year that ends in an even number because Minnesota has lost to a 1-A. Yeah, Tim Brewster's dead. Long live Tim Brewster. It's kind of bittersweet for me, though, because, yes, Minnesota did lose a game that I love to watch them lose, but, you know, if that leads to the ouster of play for Brew, you know, I'm losing a lot of material there, and I'm losing way too much entertainment value. But
I feel for you, but not really.
No, it's okay. I mean, it'd be the equivalent of, you know, when John L. Smith got fired from Michigan State for you.
I still cry every night that he is no longer their coach.
And I shot myself in the face just in honor of him.
He was so wonderfully awful. I'm tearing up that he's not in the Big Ten anymore, really.
I know. Really, he's fallen off the map, and you know, we're all kind of sad for that. But, yes, Minnesota did crap the bed. Proverbially and literally against South Dakota. And Tim, fighting Tim Brewster, decided to use this occasion of all occasions to harp on the fact that their athletics budget isn't big enough and that he needs more money to win.
Yeah, because that brand new stadium, obviously, you're an idiot.
Yes.
when you give up 41 points to a FCS school, that's, yeah, I mean, I couldn't defend Bill Martin when we lost to Appalachian State. That is fail cast. That is absolute fail. No.
As an occasional observer of Nebraska football, I could have told you 2 years ago when Kevin Cosgrove came in there that that would happen. Their defense is just a disaster, and Brew's got nobody but his defensive coordinator pick to thank for that one. But on to happier things.
Yes.
Michigan, your boys in blue, took out the Notre Dame Fighting Irish in the shadow of Touchdown Jesus. Dave, congratulations on the win. How you feeling?
Well, the hangover has worn off. We got down to South Bend on Friday night, and I think the drinking stopped around about 4 o'clock on Sunday. So, but I mean, we had an amazing time. You know, for those of you that have spouses or family members, I think it's different with spouses that went to the opposing school. It's very difficult to root for your team, as you sit with them. So the game for me was not just incredibly stressful because it was close and it was an amazing game and back and forth, and we really didn't know how it was going to end. It's stressful because you really can't do all those wonderful things you want to do if you were sitting with, you know, like your college buddies and scream and say the horrible things that get you ejected from a stadium. I couldn't do that. And inside, I hurt a little bit over that. But on the field, however, getting away from my own personal life, on the field, I was really impressed with Michigan's defense. with the exception of two gigantic screw-ups by our deep safety. And I thought Robinson was absolutely amazing. But the thing that I want to make sure doesn't get missed in that is just how good Michigan's wide receivers were. I don't think anybody expected the wide receivers to be that good this year, and they have just been outstanding, not just as blockers, but as pass catchers on critical downs. That third and five completion to Roundtree was, you know, nine times out of ten you're probably going to miss that, but he made that happen. And it was, as a Michigan fan, it's really fun to watch, but we've been here before, so a lot of people are checking their optimism kind of at the door before we see what happens going into Big Ten play. But, you know, I mean, that was just one game on a string of really great games for the Big Ten. I think the biggest one on the biggest stage was Ohio State just absolutely demolishing Miami. You know, I caught bits and pieces of this, but holy crap, they looked awesome. I mean, what was your takeaway from that Ohio State game?
Yeah, I'm with you. I didn't catch the entirety of it. Basking in the glow of victory kind of got in the way of that a little bit. But just coming out, especially in the second quarter, and just putting it on Miami in a way that we haven't seen anybody do in quite some time. And it wasn't, you know, it was inevitable at that point that they were going to win. It was just a question of, you know, by what count. You know, I'm starting to feel like Pryor is turning the corner if he hasn't already turned it. Their defense made a couple of small mistakes, but man, their back seven can really ball hawk. They got, you know, a couple of INTs to really solidify it, and just an impressive performance by Ohio State. I don't think anybody in the conference is looking forward to seeing them as if they were before.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about this because we've talked about this before. Is I hate to say it, but Terrell Pryor actually looks like a real quarterback. Are you starting to get that, or is it just still too early to figure that out?
No, I think we're starting to get that feeling, and this game only solidified what we took away from Oregon, that he can take over, and that even when defenses are keyed solely to him, you know, he finds a way to put some points on the board. And if Ohio State's scoring points, they're awfully damn tough to beat because that defense is as good as it gets.
Yeah, I was absolutely and completely impressed with Pryor in that game, and I mean I think his line just shows it. And that if that team plays at a high level an entire game, they're going to be really tough to beat this year. Sadly, the team that's probably going to be hardest to beat throughout the country right now is Alabama, and Penn State just ran into a buzzsaw down in Tuscaloosa this week. And if there was a I can't say a worse win. A worse loss than the Minnesota game because they lost to an FCS school. But in terms of just an absolute all-out butt-whooping, I mean, Penn State just got hung on. I mean, what did you take away from that game? Are there positives for the Nittany Lions after that game?
I think Alabama has given the top-notch teams in the Big Ten, the three that we knew beforehand especially, Ohio State, Iowa, Wisconsin, didn't have huge questions on defense, especially Ohio State and Iowa. I think the blueprint's there for how you beat Penn State. They basically came in and just shut down Evan Royster and said, we're going to make Bolden beat us, and Bolden wasn't up to the task, which is an awfully tall order to fill when you're up against that defense. But, just as thorough a beatdown as you can get in a game that finished 24-3. You felt all along like Alabama could have scored much, much more if they really wanted to.
Yeah, I didn't think they were in that game at all. From the opening snap all the way through the end of the game, even when they got 3 points to make it a symbolic, not a shutout, it wasn't pretty. And the thing that surprised me the most, and hopefully we'll touch on this when we get to Mike, is that Evan Royster is disappearing. I don't know if that's Evan Royster, if that's the line. I mean, what's your thought? My thought is the line.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I've from watching them, it looks like they're still in a little bit of disarray on the line. And you know, it was the book on Penn State last year early on too, and that line solidified about halfway through the year. But if you got them in the first part of the season, you know, you could beat Penn State by simply, you know, rushing four and dropping back and letting, you know, Darryl Clark at that time make mistakes. Or in this case, you can, you know, wait for Bolden to throw a pick or two, and LAM did exactly that. You know, 13-29 isn't the greatest line as it is, but when you're only averaging 5 yards per completion,
yeah.
Or 5 yards per attempt, you got some real problems on your hands.
Well, I mean, the way that I'm looking at the conference right now, I think Ohio State is clearly the class right now. Until we get a chance to see, you know, Iowa play a higher BCS quality opponent, I think the jury is unfortunately still has to be out on them. I mean, the way that I'm looking at at the Big Ten right now is Ohio State is clearly number one, Wisconsin's number two, Iowa's number three, or you can flip-flop either one of those. Who do you see from four through six?
Well, I think until proven otherwise, you got to put Michigan at four, and I'd even hesitate to put them that low. I mean, they might be in the top three at this point. You know, clearly it's early, but their body of work is as good as anybody in the conference right now. And so I'd definitely put them right up there. You know, my dark horse pick, the Northwestern Wildcats, they haven't played anybody yet. the Mildcats. They did go down to Nashville and beat Vandy, and they dispatched with their cupcake this weekend, and now they get to go to Rice for week three, and you know that schedule sets up well for them. They are probably a team to be reckoned with in November. I'd put them at probably at five at this point, and then I haven't seen a lot of Michigan State yet, but what I have seen, they've looked pretty good, and they've got to be in the top six. After that is the big drop off. You know, Indiana looked good against Towson, but they were playing Towson. They had the week off last week, and you know, Illinois has already got a loss on the books. Purdue's already got a loss on the books against the team that Michigan already beat, and Minnesota is just laugh-tastic.
Yeah, no, they're kind of dead. Well, I mean, it's interesting. You start talking a little bit about Michigan State as kind of being an unknown, and I think we're going to get a real good snapshot of how good they are this coming week, especially, you know, with Notre Dame on the schedule. I'm really curious to see how Michigan State stacks up against Notre Dame's front seven. The one thing that really, really impressed me about Notre Dame was just how well the front seven flowed to the running back, not necessarily, you know, the running quarterback like Denard Robinson, because I really don't think they understood just how fast he was, and that's why they said, let's make Robinson beat us. But whenever Mike Shaw or Vincent Smith carry the ball, you had Manti Te'o in the backfield immediately, Calabrese was in the backfield immediately, and Michigan State isn't a team that's going to have, you know, Kirk Cousins beat you with his legs.
Yeah.
We're really going to get a good idea of just how good that offense is this weekend. And another team we're really going to get a good idea of how good they are this weekend is, honestly, Iowa. I mean, you guys have a tough test coming up with Arizona. Nick Foles looks two games in, and beating up on the Citadel doesn't count, but two games in, he looks like one of the better quarterbacks in the Pac-10. What's your take on how this one's going to play out?
Well, you know, I didn't get to see them against the Citadel because, shockingly, it wasn't available in my area, but I did see Arizona and their first game against the Toledo Rockets of Toledo, and they were absolutely dominant. Their defensive line looked much quicker and much bigger than I remember them being last season. We didn't see Foles last year we didn't see him start last year when they came to Kinnick. He's kind of grown into that role. Former Iowa safety and current Arizona head coach Mike Stoops this past week said that Foles actually reminded him a lot of Stansy as a sophomore, where, you know, he kind of jumped in, you know, early in the season, kind of got his feet wet while learning how to kind of lead the team, and by the time he hit his junior year, hit the ground running, and that's, I think, kind of how Arizona's looked so far. I mean, I've got him number two in my blog poll this week, which is nuts, but...
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, but, you know, they've been very, very impressive against the middling competition they've seen so far. Now, with that said, they haven't seen anything like Iowa yet either, so it'll be a big test for both teams. I'm actually really surprised that we're not seeing game day at one of the two Big Ten games this week, and instead we're getting them at Clemson, but, you know, it's sometimes the way the ball bounces.
Well, you know, I mean, the ACC needs a win right now, so, I mean, I really can't say I blame game day for being there, because otherwise it's just kind of going to be, hey, let's get some dirt and a shovel. Let's just, you know, I mean, the hole's there. But there is one other big game that's kind of on the slate is my good friend, Stephen Threet, the dual Threet, will be torturing the Wisconsin Badgers as Arizona State goes to Wisconsin. I think this one could be a truly entertaining matchup just because you've got Threet, the statuesque, you know, rocket arm, you know, coffee table mobility quarterback going up against Wisconsin's depleted secondary. You've got, you know, Dennis Erickson is coming to town, so God knows that's going to be fun. Coke orgies and arrest galore. I think Wisconsin probably rolls in this game, but if Wisconsin loses to Stephen 3 twice in different conferences. Do you have to burn Madison to the ground? I'm just curious.
I think you put up a statue of Stephen 3 right outside Camp Randall if that happens. Now, that being said, yeah, this shouldn't be a real problem for Wisconsin. I don't think Arizona State's a particularly good team this year. They've got a lot of youth, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So I don't see Wisconsin getting a real contest from them, but I didn't think they'd get one last week either, and they ended up only beating San Jose State by 13.
Yeah.
Speaking of not a contest, Southern Cal goes to Minnesota. I just wanted to bring that up.
Well, I mean, it's good that you did, because think about it. I mean, Virginia, who hasn't been good since, what, 1995? You know, they gave USC all they could handle. I mean, it's one of those ones where, you know, it was sad that Rick Neuheisel had to apologize to everybody because Stanford kicked the holy crap out of UCLA. But honestly, I mean, is there any fan base in America that's owed a bigger apology than USC right now? I mean, Reggie Bush is giving back Heismans. They're banned from postseason for 2 years. They lost, what, 157 scholarships? And then they play Virginia. Friggin' Virginia that has absolutely nobody on their roster. They've got nothing but 5 stars and 4 stars in their starting lineup, and they barely beat them.
Yep.
I mean, this would make my entire year if Minnesota somehow upset USC. Well, I think it would make every college football fan, except yours, every college football fan except Hawkeye State, Bad Ben, and the people at Blackheart Gold Pants, they would be so goddamn thrilled to watch Lane Kiffin go down in flames up at TFC Park. I mean, am I wrong?
The only thing you're wrong about is that we wouldn't enjoy it, too. Yeah, if Minnesota somehow found a way to pull this out, first off, it would save Brewster, and let's face it, at the end of the day, that's all we're really after here. But if there's one coach on the planet that I enjoy watching lose more than Timmy, it's Lane Kiffin. So if Minnesota could find a way to win this, it would be great. It would be great for the conference. It would be great for the entire program. It would be a real lift for them. Oddly enough, this might be a game that they could potentially hang in. USC's Achilles heel is clearly their secondary. And,
yeah.
You know, Weber hasn't necessarily progressed as they had planned, but he's got a couple targets at least he can throw the ball to.
Archie's great. He's the real deal. I think he's going to be a very, very scary receiver in a year or two.
Yeah, if they keep him there, absolutely. I mean, there's still talk of him possibly still playing quarterback, but if he stays a receiver, he's going to be pretty special, I think. He's very much like, you know, we had with Marvin McNutt last year, where, you know, he made the transition pretty seamlessly and could, you know, really become a target for Weber at least this year. So I wouldn't be surprised if Minnesota's hanging around about the half. I'd be really surprised if they stayed a little bit longer than that. But, you know, Kansas lost to a 1AA and then went down and beat Georgia Tech, or had Georgia Tech come to them and win. So, you know, stranger things have happened, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing I can think of as well. All right, so we've covered the big ones. We've covered the amusing ones. Let's take a look at the bottom half of the schedule real quick. Northern Illinois versus Illinois. I think Illinois wins that one, especially after what Iowa State did to Northern Illinois. Michigan-UMass, Michigan should probably roll on that one. Ohio State-Ohio, no. Someone's bringing a body bag, and I'm guessing Ohio's required to bring their own. Penn State-Kent State. Penn State rolls. Bolden plays better. Now, here's one that actually should be kind of interesting. Ball State versus Purdue.
I'm going to be very interested in that game because we get Ball State in week 4. And so I'd kind of like to see how they stack up against, you know, a kind of a middle of the pack Big Ten team before they come to Kinnick. But, you know, I still have to think that Purdue's going to be able to put together enough to get them there, especially at home.
All right. That's fair enough.
I'm very excited about Northern Illinois because, as I've said before, Northern Illinois, by virtue of playing Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa State this year, is my second favorite team.
Oh, God. I mean, I can't remember. Is Illinois playing Minnesota this year? I think they are.
They are, yes. The Battle of Who Can Care Less, November 13th. It's going to be fantastic.
The Battle of Dead Men Walking. We got to do something special for that.
We will. Zombies.
We're going to be pouring a little bit of Courvoisier on the curb for that one.
The other one I might watch, especially because it's a kind of a late game that's going to be a nice little precursor to Iowa if Michigan State and Notre Dame kind of get out of hand would be Northwestern Rice.
Yeah, I saw that. Sam McGuffey goes up against Northwestern. That could be
a former Michigan transfer is making an appearance again. Yeah, Sam McGuffey.
You know, I'm starting to think that the Michigan's turning into the Chicago Cubs. It's really starting to worry me a little bit. All of our transfers show up and they keep coming back. It's really starting to annoy me. But I think I don't see Northwestern having any problem with Rice. I don't know why. I know that there have been, I think Brian over at MGO Blog has been very, they're just Northwestern, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, man. I mean, the more I watch this team and the more Fitz gets comfortable, I'm starting to get really friggin' scared of this program. And watch them go out and drop a turd on the field at Rice. But, like I said, I think this team has the potential, just based on their schedule, to win 10 games. And that scares the hell out of me.
I think it's absolutely possible. And, the only thing that that might make it competitive, Rice at least initially hung with Texas in week one. So,
yeah,
they might have a chance of keeping it close. They are at home. I would assume that Northwestern in the end, wins by a couple touchdowns.
Yeah, but I also think Texas took that game a little lighter than they probably should have, and I think Northwestern's traveling to Rice with the understanding that, this is just like that Vanderbilt game, and we don't want that to happen again. Because I think Northwestern was clearly the better team than Vanderbilt, but I don't think they came with everything they needed to. And Rice is an interesting place to play, and it's not just because of the football team; it's because of the band. If I could digress for just 2 seconds on a story,
please go ahead.
Anyone who's from Texas knows about this story, but for those of you that aren't, this is definitely something that you can get on the Googles and find out about. But this is back probably about 20, 30 years ago. Rice was playing Texas A&M. This is a Southwest Conference matchup where, I think it was actually one where Rice was decent but not great. A&M was, at that point, a power. And the Texas A&M mascot, the Collie, Reveille, had just died. So this happened right before the game, and the Rice marching band goes out on the field at halftime, forms a fire hydrant, and starts playing Taps.
Ooh.
So,
ouch.
And if I recall correctly, it wasn't Texas A&M. So not only do they have stones, they're not really that smart. So I think it was half of the Rice band was held at gunpoint until the authorities intervened and released them. So, anytime the Rice band is involved, I have to think they're going to have something creative thought up for Northwestern that's going to be completely inappropriate and awful. So, if you can't actually get a full live feed for that game, screw watching the actual game. See what the Rice band does. That will define the whole experience.
And now I know what I'm going to be doing at about 8:30 on Saturday night. Thanks, man.
I do what I can. I mean, I'll probably be out drinking somewhere at a bar, but you can sit at home at the internet.
Yeah, that's what I'll end up doing. That's what usually ends up happening.
Well, we've babbled long enough. We should probably get to our guest. I mean, we've got a pile of questions about the ACC because, believe it or not, I hear he was a football player. So we'll actually get real insight rather than, you and I just babbling like idiots. But let's get to the phones here. We'd like to welcome Michael Felder from InTheBleachers.net. Mike is a former UNC safety. He is also one of the contributors to the award-winning InTheBleachers.net podcast and is a regular contributor there. Mike, thanks so much for joining us. We're really happy to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me on, Dave and Pat. I'm really excited to talk a little football.
Well, outstanding. Well, let's dive right in because I know you sat down in front of the DVR and watched more football than is probably healthy to the body. But the big one for Big Ten fans was Ohio State and Miami. It wasn't pretty for Miami. What did you take away from that game watching Ohio State?
That Ohio State is very good. They're a fast football team, and, that's a team that can run with anybody. They've had some defensive lapses that Miami obviously couldn't capitalize on, but overall they're as sound a football team as there is in the country.
Well, here's a question about that. You've played a little safety. What did you think of, speaking specifically of those defensive lapses, do you think those are lapses that are going to come back and bite them in the butt later on in the year, or are these things that can be corrected?
I think they're film issues. Like, it's not an ability issue where they have a guy that doesn't have the ability to make the play. I think it's purely missed assignments, a little confusion in the back end. It's not necessarily a technique issue. I mean, you're looking at guys that have been playing together and they know what they're doing. You just kind of got to work out those early kinks, and these guys are just, I mean, they're going to be fine. It's a lot better to get those out of the way early with a guy who could not hit on a deep pass to save his life in Jakori Harris than to get into the schedule and have that errant pass on a 25-yard ball turn into a connection from Ricky Stanzi.
Speaking of Ricky Stanzi, Mike, you sort of rocked the boat a little bit over at Black Heart Gold Pants this year when you went even further than we did and took Iowa to go to the national championship game. I know talking to you before the show, you've had a chance to watch a little bit of Iowa from last week in their mollywhopping of Iowa State. Was there anything you took from that game that changed your perception of the team from preseason or solidified that perception you had?
Honestly, it solidified it. And the offense is what I expected. They're sound. They're going to score as many points as they need to win. But what I took away from that, honestly, was the defense. That defense is as fast as any defense in the country. And that was the one part I was skeptical on. I knew they were going to play sound technical football. I knew they were going to come correct in terms of the hard-nosed attitude. But I wasn't sure they were as fast as they needed to be to be a major player playing against Ohio State and getting to crack through to win the Big Ten. But watching them play last week, those guys are fast. They run, and it's not just Claiborne and Benz. I mean, the Sash kid is an absolute stud back there. And anytime you get a back end front end combo like that threesome of Benz, Claiborne, and Sash, you're going to have them putting pressure, and Sash is going to benefit from that a ton.
I could just hear. I could hear him getting excited about this.
I'm doing jumping jacks right now, just so you guys know.
Well, I mean, let's stay on the speed issue. That's been the biggest knock on the Big Ten for a long time, and I mean, we've always maintained that it's cyclical, but it looks like the Big Ten's overall team speed has just gone through the roof recently. And one of the guys that has really seemed to be adding to that growing perception of the Big Ten as getting a lot faster is Denard Robinson. You had a chance to watch him. What's your take on the sophomore signal caller?
How can you not like Shoelace? I mean, the guy is an absolute beast. He's fast no matter what. He's fast in the SEC. He's fast in the ACC. He's fast in the Big 12. The kid can flat out fly. And the issue for him is going to be making sure that 180-pound, 185-pound body can sustain those, can stay healthy and sustain those blows. I mean, Rich Rod did a good job of managing that with Pat White, another guy who was kind of slight of build. So I think with that speed, he'll give any team fits, and Michigan's going to be, they're going to be in the hunt in terms of, you know, getting to 8 wins, and then they're going to give everybody trouble no matter who's on their schedule because of that influx in team speed that comes with Robinson as the headliner. But that Michigan team overall is really picked up in terms of team speed.
Now, Mike, not quite such a good result this week for Penn State when they went down to Tuscaloosa to take on Alabama. Basically, you know, Alabama dominated the game from start to finish and you know, put up 17 before Penn State could really even, you know, mount any sort of comeback. Was Penn State's difficulty down in Tuscaloosa a function of just how good Alabama's going to be, or do you think there's some sort of structural flaw in how Penn State's approaching this year?
Well, there's two things when I look at it. First of all, Alabama physically probably has the best roster in the country. They any way you want to play football with them, they can play. And it's not because that they're going to spread you out. If they wanted to, they probably could. But they can play football no matter any way you want to play it because they have the bodies to physically beat on you until you can't get off the mat anymore. So that's one thing that Penn State was going to be behind the eight ball on no matter what. The second thing is going into a game with a freshman quarterback, you're dealing with a playbook that's maybe half, maybe even as little as a quarter of the size of the traditional playbook that you're going to go into a game with. And anytime you do that, you allow a guy like Nick Saban, who is just an utter mastermind, to really key in on what the kid is able to do. And whereas most games you're going to see some variation between game week one to week two between a Youngstown State into an Alabama where a lot of teams hold stuff back. We saw that with Oklahoma holding things back against Utah State and then exploding against Florida State. Penn State wasn't really able to hold stuff back against Youngstown State because they had to get this kid reps, and they had to get him reps in the system and doing the things that he was going to be doing the next week in Tuscaloosa. So that was kind of what that's what handicapped them a lot. And you'll see going forward, they'll start to open the playbook up as Bolden starts to grasp some of the concepts. But they're really the thing with Penn State that gets me that I didn't expect is their utter lack of running game. I thought they'd lean harder on Evan Royster, and at first blush, a lot of folks probably say, well, it was Alabama. They shut down the run. But you look at his stats against Youngstown State. The kid, his total stats, he hasn't had over 100 yards on the season. So their running game has been almost non-existent.
Well, do you think that Penn State, based on a freshman quarterback and some problems on their defensive line and their secondary, et cetera, do you think they can legitimately challenge for a Big Ten title this year?
No. No, I don't. I mean, it's short, and it's going to hurt that one of the original guys that ran the site, Brian Sikowski, when he hears this, it's going to hurt him. But no, I don't think Penn State is a very, very distant fourth, maybe fifth, depending upon how Michigan matures this season.
Now, you just mentioned that Alabama's probably got the most talent on their roster of any team. I know you had before discussed Alabama-Iowa as a potential one. I just keep bringing that up because I want to. but if we end up getting a national championship where an Ohio State or an Iowa gets matched up with Alabama, do you think that they've got the horses to hang with the Crimson Tide?
The way Alabama plays football, absolutely. And the way I think Alabama-Iowa would be an epic matchup of guys that want to beat you silly and then see who's the last man standing. I think Ohio State-Alabama would be another great matchup of two just traditional powers, folks that are going to come into the game, and they're not going to try and trick you. They're not going to try and spread you out. They want to hit you in the mouth and see who's the last one standing. I think they've got the rosters to play with them. I just think in the end, Alabama, whether it's the, apparently now the triumvirate of running backs with Lacy adding to the mix with Ingram and Trent Richardson, just the monster. Those guys, you look at their offensive line, just 300-pound guys that are going to lean on you. I think in the end they'll wear down folks, but absolutely, they're Iowa – even Wisconsin, if they got into that, Iowa, Wisconsin has a roster that can play that type of football, and obviously Ohio State's got one of the more talented rosters in the country.
Well, you mentioned Wisconsin, and that's my Big Ten champion pick this year. Based, I mean, 10 returning starters back, and for some reason, Bielema always has a good defense. What do you think is the biggest impediment to the Badgers winning the Big Ten this year? Is it the schedule? Is it the other teams? Or is there something internal that could derail them?
I think it's internal. I mean, they've got just as much, or just maybe a shade less talent than the other teams that are in it to win the Big Ten in terms of Iowa and Ohio State. But I just think that they've got whether I don't know if it's cultural, if it's mental, they don't get the job done, and it's tough to say that about a football team. But you look around the country, and there's a ton of teams that kind of fit that bill. Whether you look at a team like an Arkansas that just can't seem to get over the hump in the SEC, you look at Oklahoma State, they can't do it. Clemson can't do it in the ACC. There's Oregon State has had it on their racket several times, and they couldn't close. And Wisconsin just seems to be one of those teams that they have it on their racket, and then they lay an egg. And until they do it a lot, folks like me, myself included, I'm not going to pick them because I don't know that they're going to close. I mean, what's the last time they did that? Ron Dane? Is that how long it's been?
It's pretty close to that, yeah, actually.
It's been about that long.
You cover the whole country and in the bleachers, but we know you're an ACC guy at heart. We sympathize with you for the whole national perception issue after this past week. But what's your take on what happened this weekend with Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech and Miami? Is there what's the redemption for the ACC here? How should we not be taking this as a strong blow to the conference?
This weekend was a swift kick into the teeth. I mean, it hurt from a it hurt from a national perspective. And even though Florida State and Miami were both underdogs in those games, you thought they would have shown better. Obviously, Florida State just got absolutely dominated by Oklahoma, a team that clearly was not on their P's and Q's. Whether they were underprepared or sandbagging, that remains to be seen for Utah State. But they absolutely were prepared to beat down Florida State. And then you look at Ohio State, and yes, they gave up two special teams touchdowns. That's correctable. That's a lot more correctable than getting steamrolled the way that Miami did by the Ohio State offense. So I think that the league as a whole, those were two pretty bad losses because they were on a national stage. The James Madison loss, just really is a head scratcher. I think that I've heard folks say, well, they only had, you know, X amount of days for to prepare, four practice days, I believe. But I don't care if you don't practice at all. You ought to line up and beat those guys. You've got a lot more talent on your roster than they do. And it boils down to the fact that going forward, that the shot at redemption, if you will, since the original question, the shot at redemption for the ACC, I guess you could point to this weekend, Clemson-Auburn, as a shot. But, I mean, that's one game. And then you look at the end of the season and you've got Florida State, Florida, and Georgia, Georgia Tech, and South Carolina, Clemson. But the league, it's never going to get to the point where it should, where it wants to be, when you lose these, when you schedule these marquee matchups, if you don't win them. And I've had my own share of arguments with verbal sparring with ACC folks who say, yeah, well, at least we scheduled those games. The SEC doesn't do it. And I just don't listen. Like, you don't get any cookies, no crackers, no nothing for scheduling a game that you get your brains beat in, you know? So I'm sorry, but there's no juice for that. You don't get anything for it. And so the league's got a lot of work to do, and I think that by the end of the year, well, the teams will be better. North Carolina will get some players back. Georgia Tech will hopefully get on track. Their defense is awful, though. And I will say this one thing, and I've said it earlier on another show. If the one thing that cannot happen for the ACC this year is that Virginia Tech wins the conference. You can't let a team that lost to an FCS school be your conference champion. That would be absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
I remember that as a Michigan fan and as someone who still remembers losing to Appalachian State quite vividly. I remember going into the last few weeks of the season thinking, hey, we could still win the conference championship. Woohoo! And that was no good for anybody. But, I mean, I want to focus on the Virginia Tech loss just for a second here. Virginia Tech has had a reputation for the last few years, ever since Michael Vick left, of being the school that just can't get it done in big games. And, you know, the Boise State game, I thought Frank Beamer gave that game away. And then, you know, James Madison the next week. Is it turning into a systemic problem at Virginia Tech? Is this just one of those things where they're always going to be recruiting great players and be a mediocre football team? Or is this a program that can be a national power again? Because it certainly isn't now.
Well, I think that this is a team. I mean, you're talking about a team that's won 10 games, I believe, for the last 6 or 7 years. Their issue is that they have a ceiling, and everybody, I believe, in the college football world has a ceiling. I think Virginia Tech's reaching their ceiling where they're not going to get a lot better players. They're never going to be able to recruit nationally. They recruit the Hampton Roads area, the Newport News area, the Tidewater area of Virginia like no other, but they own that area, but they don't have the cachet to get out and go get kids beyond that realm. They don't get a ton of kids from Florida. They don't get a ton of kids from Georgia. And so with that said, they've always got a ceiling. And I think we're starting to see that ceiling. And as you guys know, once you reach a certain point and your program starts to plateau, the only place you can go is down. And we may be witnessing kind of the downstroke for Virginia Tech, where they're going to kind of trend down until they make some changes, whether they're institutional or just staff-wise with the program.
Now, Mike, as an ACC fan, you're kind of a veteran of conference expansion. I mean, the ACC went from 9 to 12 a few years back, bringing in VTech and Miami and Boston College. For the Big Ten fans out there, a little trepidatious about Nebraska coming into the fold, how did you feel it changed the conference, and was it an overall good or an overall bad for the ACC?
I'll tell you what. While the expansion was going down, I was getting recruited for football, and all I could see was this is going to be fantastic. Whether I go to Wake or Duke or Carolina, this is going to be awesome. And it happened, and it wasn't as awesome as I thought it was going to be, because every single team except for Wake Forest seemed to trend down. But I think you guys are in a unique space because you're not changing the entire complexion of the conference. You guys are adding Nebraska, and Nebraska is they're a group of folks that are going to fit in. To hear everyone tell it, they're some of the nicest fans in the country. They're some of the best fans in the country. They travel well. They love their football. They're knowledgeable about their football. And those are the same things that I hear said of Big Ten fans, you know, whether it's Iowa or Wisconsin or Ohio State or in Michigan. No matter what, I hear
you lie about
thing.
Ohio State.
But whether the same, I hear the same thing said about the Big Ten fans. So it's a group of folks that are gonna, I think they're going to fit in right at home. I think the Nebraska-Iowa series is going to be absolutely fantastic. I think you're talking about another huge addition to the conference in a positive way because you're getting a group of people that are going to that should fit right in, sort of the way that adding Virginia Tech into the ACC fit in with the ACC, where Miami and BC kind of were the tough ones because they're the two outliers of the conference in terms of location. Nebraska is going to fit right in, and I think that the biggest addition is getting that Big 12 title game, and I mean, excuse me, the Big 10 title game, Big 10 12 teams. the game is you don't like it. It's outstanding. It really is, and I'm telling you, when Michigan or Iowa's in that game, and you get a chance to go to whether it's in Indy or they rotate locations, you'll have a blast going to that game. I've been to one ACC title game, one SEC championship game, and they were both some of the ACC game was good. The SEC title game, because it's in the heartland of SEC country, not segmented the way the ACC game was. The SEC title game was absolutely unbelievable, and I think the fans, once they get into it, will really embrace that.
Well, what I'm praying for is that they actually finally get off their butt and schedule the Big Ten championship game at Soldier Field in December. If that happens, I'm going to be the happiest man on earth because there is nothing like a game in Chicago in the middle of winter. It sucks. Oh. It's awesome. And you can buy beer there, which, you know.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, but my little brother lives in Chicago. I went to visit him over Thanksgiving last year. Or, excuse me, over Halloween. It was the end of October, start of November. No, thank you. There's no way that I'm watching football outside. This is the start of November. There's no way I'm doing it in December.
You pansy! It's beautiful out there. Big Ten football, Division One football.
We're not that slow. We're just cold. That's all.
Yeah. Is. No way.
It solidifies the blood.
Yes, it does.
Well, with that, Mike, we'll let you go. We want to thank you for coming on the show and remind all of our listeners they can catch you at inthebleachers.net and on the In the Bleachers podcast, as well as frequently updating on Twitter.
Check out the Twitter account. He's awesome.
I love the Twitter. Thank you guys so much for having me on, Dave and Pat. Thank you so much. I had a blast.
All right, man. We'll do it again soon.
All right. Take it easy.
Well, Pat, I actually learned something on that one. What do you think? I mean, I think we actually got a really good take on what the ACC is going to have to do for the rest of the year, and I think we got a pretty good take on how the Big Ten is being viewed on the national scale. What's your thought, man?
Absolutely. Excellent call from Mike. Very informative, very entertaining. We thank him again for being here.
All right, folks. Well, I think that's going to do it. Guys, you can go back to your wives, girlfriends, or, you know, whatever you have purchased online. But we'll be back again next week. Hopefully, we'll have a relatively big name. At least we're trying to get a relatively big name for the podcast next week. But thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next week.